The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Listen in as we journey to some of Italy's most beautiful places in the company of those who know them best, the families who grow grapes and make fabulous wines. Through their stories, we will learn not just about their wines, but also about their ways of life, the local and regional foods and specialities that pair naturally with their wines, and the most beautiful places to visit. We have a wonderful journey of discovery ahead of us, and I hope you will join me. Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Today I'm going just down the road from my home in Topsham, Devon, to somewhere that is very special to me, Dart's Farm, to meet my guest, George Dart. Dart's Farm is a farm shop that consistently wins national awards for being the best large farm shop in the UK. It's been described in The Guardian as like finding Selfridge's food hall in the middle of a field. George, thanks so much for being my guest today. I'm thrilled to be able to share the Dart's Farm story with our global Italian Wine Podcast listeners. How are you today?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Oh, no, it's going to be nice to have a chat today. Our listeners, George, are located all over the world, and I really want them to gain a vivid idea in their minds of this special place that I live in and where you are as well. So can you describe where Dart's Farm is, you know, the countryside and the beauty of this special place?
Yeah, of course. So we are located just on the outskirts of Topsham, which is a historic port in southwest of England, in Devon. We're in this lovely, beautiful Clyst Valley, which is one of the tributaries of the River Exe, which is a gorgeous, fertile, green, luscious valley. And yeah, we're very lucky to be in one of the greatest kind of food producing parts of the UK. Two coastlines, gorgeous rolling hills. Surrounded by the most amazing food producers and growers and farmers and fishermen and a customer base that are really infused and engaged in what we do.
Yeah, that's true, George. And we'll discuss that in a little more detail. And I think Dart's Farm really is a reflection of the way food has evolved both here in Devon, but also across the UK. And your family's been very much a part of that story. Now, I've been living in Topsham for more than 45 years. So I can recall when Dart's Farm was a pick-your-own business, a roadside stall, actually. So why don't you just explain a little bit about the origins of Dart's Farm and how it began and how it's evolved to what it is today?
Yeah, of course. So my family have been farmers for generations. And it was my grandfather who first started farming the farm here. Originally, it was a dairy farm. And then granddad, I never knew him, but by all accounts, he was a huge character and a real innovator. So he was known as one of the best vegetable growers around. He invented this machine called a collector crop, which helped to kind of automate harvesting cabbages and cauliflowers. And yeah, so he started growing vegetables for the wholesale market and the emergent supermarkets at the time. Quickly realized that was a bit of a road to ruin. Just the same old story that if you're selling anything to a supermarket, you're not going to make enough money to live. So yeah, he went out to California and saw this concept of pick your own, where people would come out to a farm, pick their own produce, and kind of engage with growing and farming. And then just pay a few pence at the farm gate and off they go. So he started one of the first, it may have been the first pick your own concept in the UK. And from there we grew and he started selling kind of milk and cream from Mary Quick, who we now sell her cheese, and I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with Quick's cheese, and then some local eggs, and it kind of snowballed from there. Unfortunately, he then died in the 1970s when my dad and uncles were still fairly young, and they came back from agricultural college and kind of continued what he started. And this was at a time before kind of local food was trendy and cool and fashionable. They just had these beliefs that you should be eating food from well, produced around you, and there shouldn't be these big supply chains and disconnect between farming that had started to emerge in the decades before that. So, so yeah, Dad and brothers had this vision of somewhere that combined kind of local food with warm hospitality and the great outdoors and home and lifestyle. And in the past 30 odd years, we've just grown slowly in the same kind of agricultural barns. And now we have just shy of 250 people employed within the business, another 150 jobs on site, butchery, fishmongers, cheesemonger, all the things you'd expect from a farm shop. But then also outdoor clothing, homeware, a wellness spa. So a full kind of holistic lifestyle experience, but still very much rooted in agriculture and farming. And we're now farming more than ever. We have a gorgeous herd of native ruby red Devon cattle, kind of a mixed rotational farm, seasonal vegetables, a little bit of arable and oats and wheat. So yeah, that's kind of where we got to today.
Yeah, it is quite an inspiring story, George, and it's one that I've followed because I've known your dad and your uncle for many, many years. And I've seen the business grow from that roadside pick your own to first a small farm shop and then a small farm shop with a butcher and a deli. And gradually it's grown and grown into a really amazing and wonderful food hall. But as you say, with a lot of other businesses that are on site as well. So it's been a long evolution, but evolution that's also been following the story of how food is evolved and our engagement with food here in the UK. So I feel very fortunate that, Darts is on the doorstep. I can walk to it. But I think our listeners can also understand how the UK has changed over the last 30 years. And we are much more aware, perhaps in an Italian way, of the importance of eating local, of sustainable foods, of supporting local producers, and enjoying the bounty that's literally on our doorstep. Now, George, you mentioned Devon as having this great larder, and I think that's very important because Darts Farm is very much about local and about local producers. And so, let's just discuss that in a little more detail. What makes Devon such a special place, especially such a special place for food produce and good things to eat and drink?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of probably a combination of culture and climate, really. Me and you may be a little bit biased, Mark, but we probably feel that we've got some of the best cheese makers, cider makers, and that's probably due to the amount of rainfall we have, the mild kind of temperate climate. We grow a lot of amazing grass.
We do get a lot of rain.
We're known as a summertime kind of tourist destination, but boy, we get a lot of rain as well. But yeah, we've got amazing grass growing conditions, which translates to beautiful, diverse, rich milk, and then hence to cheese. Probably got the most land under orchard, and I know Somerset likes to lay claim to that, but if you speak to Barney from Sample Orchards, he'll tell you that Devon is the historic home of cider. And more recently, wine as well. We've got a growing amount of vineyards producing gorgeous English wine. And then the two coastlines, and I think those kind of climatic conditions have bred these people that they've got a long kind of history of producing food. There's a great kind of history and heritage of food production, whether it's salmon fishing on the Exe, anything really. And we're just really kind of lucky to be surrounded by all of these amazing people.
Lots of small artisan producers, many of whom are producing foods that can be found in the food hall.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we stock hundreds and hundreds of small suppliers that based within kind of 25 to 50 miles. They regularly come in for tastings, and we get together at food festivals. And it's a really, really great kind of culture and community to be a part of.
At heart, Darts Farm still remains, although it's grown and grown over the years, and I've seen it grow, it's very much a family business with your father and your uncles, Mike, Jim, and Paul. And now you're in the business. George, how old are you? And when did you decide that you wanted to carry on in the family business? Was that a difficult decision?
Yeah, so I'm 26 years old now. Me and my sisters and cousins grew up around the business. And all of my earliest memories are making dens in the stock room and causing carnage. Probably looking back now, it must have been a nightmare for all the staff. And then as soon as we could be put to use, we were made to work, and kind of Dad was very keen on making us do every job in the business and learning everything from the ground up, which was great. And then at the same time, surrounded by all these passionate and energetic people, all these food producers and staff, was an amazing part of my upbringing. And then kind of went off to study at Reading University.
What did you study, George?
I did food marketing and business economics.
Okay.
Which on paper sounds very relevant. But it was a slightly different school of thought to what I was used to down here. It was very much geared towards getting a kind of grad job at Diageo or Aldi. So I learned a lot of interesting things, but it was kind of a little bit alien to what I've kind of grown up with. So I came back after uni. I still wasn't too sure whether I was going to stay home. And there's a kind of a lot of pressure at that age. A lot of your friends go off to London and get away from home. But I was kind of drawn back to the business and this part of the world, and not necessarily a city boy. So been lucky enough to grow up in Devon. I think it's such a gorgeous place. So I came home in 2019, worked a little bit at home, and then I got an opportunity to go up to London and do some work and spend a bit of time with Neal's Yard Dairy, who are kind of the probably the UK or the world's most iconic affineur and cheese wholesaler. So at that point, I became kind of immersed and fascinated in the world of farmhouse cheese. And anyone who kind of spends time around Neal's Yard gets a little bit indoctrinated in their kind of way of thinking. So I came back from that really inspired. And then suddenly COVID just hit, bang, like that. And this kind of world that I've been introduced to was suddenly under threat with no route to market. A lot of the cheesemakers around here, say Sharpham, Greg at Sharpham, who's just in Totnes, who makes an amazing Sharpham brie, soft cheese. He had a cheese fridge full of cheese with suddenly no restaurants to buy it and a kind of a ticking time bomb. And that was the same for all of the small artisan cheese producers across the country. So we set up this campaign called 30 Days to Save British Cheese, where we kind of featured different cheesemakers each week and did an online box. And yeah, the reaction was just amazing from customers. We moved more cheese in that time, even with a pretty much half empty shop. We've moved more cheese than we would at Christmas time. COVID, I mean, for all the negative implications it had for me coming back into the business, it was probably the most dynamic and kind of innovative we've ever been, because we had to think on our feet, pivot and start new initiatives and yeah, be really dynamic. So that was probably, I never looked back from there. That was a great, great time in my life.
Yeah, it was a really challenging time for everybody to live through, but as well for businesses, it was really, really challenging as well. And I know that some of the initiatives that you were involved in during that time have, you know, really grown since then. And we'll talk about the farm table a little bit later in our chat. George, Darts Farm really champions the local and the artisan. You know, it's a great champion of food and produce from Devon and from the whole of the Southwest. But there's also always been a strong Italian connection at Darts Farm. And I'd like to just touch on that, because I think that the relation with Italy has been an important one. I've traveled to Italy on a number of occasions with your dad and your uncle, Uncle Jim. We've been to the Salone del Gusto, and I know some of the thoughts and ideas that we've discussed over the years have come to the fore in Darts Farm. But, you know, you do have a large range of artisan products from Italy. You've traveled to Italy yourself. So what do you think is so special about Italian foods and, of course, Italian wines, and why it's important to represent them in Darts Farm?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a huge admiration for Italian culture and cuisine. And I know a lot of the early inspiration for Darts Farm was from traveling in Italy, Dad and Jim, trip with you to Turin and the early Italy stores, and just kind of immersing themselves in that Italian culture. And I think it's the regionality and the identity that they've preserved that I feel we've lost a little bit here in the UK. And you can travel around Italy and have different cuisines and different way of preparing food. And they're very proud of that culture and the diversity, rich diversity that they've got across the country. And also the value that they put on food as something that should be shared with the family and with the community. Food isn't a commodity, it's a way of life. And that's something that we've truly believe in here. And although we place a big emphasis on local here, it's not necessarily just confined to the geological sense. So, I mean, we can't produce olive oil over here. We don't grow lemons. So so we try and partner with people and source products like that from small scale producers that are proud of their provenance and have a rich story behind them, just like if we were sourcing a chutney from down the road or something that's local here. And as a food retailer, we're kind of expected to sell oranges and tomatoes. So we kind of thought, why don't we just sell the best kind of Taroko Fire blood oranges? Or if you can't grow tomatoes in season here, then let's find some gorgeous winter tomatoes from Italy or Trombetta courgettes. So yeah, we've got a deep kind of relationship with Italy. And yeah, every time I go on a summer holiday, I'll text you, Mark, and ask where the best place to go is. And that's great for me to explore.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you're right. The ethos, I think, that we all appreciate and enjoy in Italy is very much in tune with that ethos at Darts Farm of enjoying seasonality, artisan foods, that craftsmanship that Italy is so good at in so many ways in the world of food and drink, and just the goodness and freshness of foods. So I think that it's very much a shared philosophy.
Italian Wine Podcast. If you think you love wine as much as we do, then give us a like and a follow anywhere you get your pods.
Of course, Italian wine is, as you know, George's, is my main passion, and we've shared some good Italian wines together, and I've drunk probably far too much with your dad at times as well. But you're now actually, and your family are also vineyard owner, and it's a vineyard that's part of my life and community because it was founded by a mutual friend, Jeff Bowen, who's no longer with us. But I was just with you a couple of days ago, and we were tasting some of the new vintages of Pebble Bed, which are drinking very well. Tell us a little bit about the Pebble Bed story.
Yes, so Mark, I mean, you'll be more familiar with the early days of Pebble Bed than I will. The first vines were planted when I was just 2 years old. So Jeff, who founded the vineyard, was way ahead of his time with viticulture in the UK and organic farming. So yeah, the vineyard was planted in 1999 as a community project between 10 families. And Jeff was this kind of larger than life, full of energy that was just, infectious and could convince anyone to do anything. So he had friends with a south-facing field, convinced them that they should all plant some vines, and made some great wine. So over the next couple of decades, Jeff planted a few more fields and was able to buy a farm just over the hedge from here in St. George, where he grew it to 8 hectares of vines. By trade, before he went into the wine trade, he was an environmental consultant, so he had a great understanding of geology and underlying soil and rock formations. And that's hence the name of the vineyard, Pebble Bed Vineyard. It owes itself to Budley Salterton Pebble Bed, which is a geological formation that stretches from Budley, which is, about three or 4 miles from here, across Woodbury Common and through to the farm here, with these great big pudding stones the size of dinner plates, which aid the drainage of the farm and give Pebble Bed the kind of unique minerality. The wines. Always had a great close relationship with Jeff between Darts Farm and Pebble Bed. Both our businesses were very aligned with values and philosophy and the way that we farmed, and also the emphasis that we put on food in the community. But then unfortunately in 2018, Jeff sadly died of a brain tumour fairly suddenly. He was always his belief that Pebble Bed should kind of stay in the local food scene. The future of Pebble Bed should be with someone that understood the values that he had and the vision that he had. So Jeff's wife Anna offered us to buy the business and the farm. So we've taken that on in the last couple of years. Still with the same winemaker that worked with Jeff for 10 years, and we continue to make the wines. Two sparkling wines, three still wines made from varieties that suit this part of the world. So cool climate varieties, Sauvignon Blanc, Rondo, Phoenix, Madeleine Angevine, all grown in a very sustainable way with very low intervention. And Mark, I mean, you would have drunk the wines for the last 20 years and probably more familiar than anyone with the Pebble Bed story and the Pebble Bed wines.
Yeah, it's an inspiring story. It's a sad story. Jeff was a dear, dear friend. I miss him. And, it was a tragedy when he died at such a young age. But he was a pioneer. He believed in English wine, in Devon wine. He was, as an environmental consultant, he was very aware of changes in climate and anticipated that Devon wines could become more and more important and actually find themselves on the world wine map as English wine is now. And so he was ahead of his time. I know he was a great friend of your family as well. And so I think it's great that Pebble Bed is in your family's hands now, because you know you respect and honor Jeff and what he did, and at the same time are taking it forward and continuing with the winemaking and with Alex. And you know, I was really impressed with the wines we tasted just 2 days ago, going back from 2022 to the 2018 vintages, and you know, a very strong Pebble Bed personality coming through. So, you know, well done to all of you. Well done to Alex, the winemaker. I think is doing a really great job. He's a young winemaker as well, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, I think he's 30 years old. So yeah, he started in vineyards when he was just 13, 14, at a local vineyard of his, and then met Jeff, began making wines at Pebble Bed over a decade ago. So yeah, he's still super young.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he's so young, but he's already got, I think he said, 12 vintages under his belt already. And he's only in his early 30s. So yeah, he's done a great job.
Yeah, and he's got encyclopedic knowledge of the farm, the terroir that we've got, and the kind of character Jeff was. He never did things simply. So when we kind of took on the business, we had to try and wrap our heads around all of the crazy things that Jeff had done around the farm. And Alex he's got the memory of an elephant, knows absolutely everything. So he's a great guy to have on board.
Yeah. Well, I think the Pebble Bed story will, you know, continue to be written in the wines that follow in the years to come. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, George, I just want to finally turn to a project that I know is very important to you. It's a project that you really brought to Dart's Farm, and it came during that strange, but as you say, productive time of COVID, and that's the farm table. I think it's a very special place that you've created. So let's just talk about the farm table, how you came up with the idea and what it actually is.
Yeah, so the farm table, it was a little bit crazy the way it came about, because we never had this grand plan or business plan or timeline for it. It was during COVID. Our original restaurant has been open for 20 years and is super busy. And then COVID hit and we were stood in the children's toy area. And at that time, we just partnered with a local cider maker, Barney from Sanford Orchards, to have a tap bar and a small batch cidery at the back of the store. So we thought we ought to probably do a little bit of food with the cider. So we kind of knocked through a wall into a little bit of the stock room and had a space for the kitchen. And then realized we had quite a big kitchen for only probably 14 seats. So we then were stood scratching our heads in the children's toy department and thought, actually, what really makes us tick? As great as teddy bears and stuff are, we believe in food, and we had demand there, we felt, with the queues at the other restaurant. So we kind of set off on this journey of building another restaurant that truly champions farm to table eating, simple food cooked on fire. And this kind of organic journey just began. And yeah, we've been very lucky that our kind of naivety has been unpunished so far. We've got a fantastic head chef that's joined us. He's got a real passion for vegetables and making vegetables the star of the show. So the ethos of the restaurant is combining the farm and the food hall. Mega seasonal, the menu changes a little bit every week depending on what's available from the fields, championing the ruby red beef that we have, and then a recently spring lamb, fish from Brixham. I'm not trying to be too clever with the food and preparing the dishes. It's all about the simple ingredients, making them sing. And we feel that's the kind of the art of a good chef is not actually having to manipulate the food. It's just how can you make the carrot or something so simple just taste so amazing. And combining that with warm hospitality and just a beautiful ambience. So yeah, we're really proud of the farm table so far. We've been open for just over a year now. And yeah, we've got a really great kind of young team that are really excited by what we're doing. And yeah, so pouring some great Italian wines from our friend Gennaro, who I know has done a podcast with you and is just down the road, collaborating with some great chefs to come in and do guest chef evenings and wonderful themed dinners, so demo and dine night. I think we might have one with you lined up. I don't know if that's common knowledge or able to be announced, but yeah, we've been doing Italian wine evening with you. So yeah, it's really exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I think it's a great place, George. I think it really is a special place because it's doing exactly what you said, cooking. I think Tom's a brilliant chef because he really just cooks simply, but really brings out the flavors of, as you say, whatever vegetables are being harvested from the fields that day or week. I think the vegetable cooking is some of the most exciting foods in the farm table, but the meats are cooked over charcoal. The fish is cooked over charcoal. You've got the pizza oven, wood-fired pizza oven as well. It's a nice atmosphere too, very casual and relaxed, and I love it. So I think you're doing a great job. I know you devote most of your time to the farm table these days, and you're running it very well. So good job.
Thank you.
And I'm certainly looking forward to my event with you. I think that's in May.
Yeah, that'll be really, really exciting. Wines from your recent book, combine that with some of Tom's food and a few stories. So I think that's the main thing is in our industry is storytelling. And we're lucky enough to have built this community of people that are really engaged in what we do. And I feel we're on the cusp of a really kind of exciting food revolution where people are starting to reject these ultra processed foods and standardized, homogenized food. And they're really seeking out local and trying to gain a better connection to where their food's produced and who's actually putting the work in. So yeah, it's a really, really exciting time to be in this industry and this part of the world.
Yeah, I think that's right. George, I think the key is, as you say, it is storytelling, you know, telling the story behind why artisan produce is so good, you know, who's making it, the human side. I really appreciate you taking the time today to tell the Darts Farm story because it has been an inspiring story that I followed over, well, nearly four decades or more than four decades, George. So I'm glad we've been able to share that with our listeners all around the world. Thanks a lot for being my guest, George, and I'll look forward to having a glass of wine with you in the farm table soon.
Really looking forward to it, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks. See you soon.
Ciao.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Wine, Food and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Please remember to like, share and subscribe right here or wherever you get your pods. Likewise, you can visit us at italianwinepodcast.com. Until next time, chin chin.